Well, a very good evening to you, and thank you for tuning in to Terrace Talk here on Radio Kerry on this Monday evening. Donal Barry with you now for the next 2 hours as we reflect back on, I suppose, some of the stories that made the headlines over the weekends and some of the sporting stories, I suppose, didn't make the headlines, as we try our best to shine a light, I suppose, on many different sporting events across the kingdom. Now, give us a call to be part of the conversation this evening, 066 712 3666, or you can text or WhatsApp us there on 083 300 3300, and Keane is doing every sort of job out there this evening, so if you don't understand the accent, bear with him, okay? It's his first night on the phones. He'll be grand. He'll be fine. But if you want to, just send the text in as well. Now, I really appreciate the time that you take to listen to the show. More and more people listening every week. It's absolutely fantastic. And it's great to see the comments coming in as well. It's a big part of the show, and hopefully you'll get a couple of comments into us as well. Now, of course, if you miss the show as well, you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Just type in Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, and you should be fine. There you'll find last week's one or any other week as well, I suppose, that you've missed. But tonight's show, and let's get talking about tonight, we're going to bring you some of the best underage talent when it comes to basketball and indeed football. We'll chat all things cycling as we check in with the organisers of Ross the Moon, and we'll get ready for their big Easter weekend, and that's from about 7:25 this evening. Now, the Liam Higgins Cup was up for grabs as well the first time, and we chat to the Kerry men who won it and brought it back to the kingdom. That's just after 7 o'clock. Brian Foley from Killarney, he's getting ready to tackle a 251-kilometre ultra marathon. That's something to look forward to, and that's heading across the Sahara Desert as well, and I'll be asking him why he's doing that just around 6:45. It's just a weekend jog, I suppose, and it was a busy weekend as well for our young hurlers of the kingdom. We'll catch up with James McCarthy and Rich Dardo for on just around 6:30 there. We chat all things hurling, we look ahead to the Joe McDonagh Cup opener against Down as well. But first on tonight's show, it's basketball. Why wouldn't it be basketball? Another national title for Garvey's Tralee Warriors, coming off the back of last year's Cup and Senior League success for the senior team. But this time the club's under 20 side captured the insuremyvan.ie men's under 20 National League title after overcoming Titans of Galway in a pulsating final at the National Basketball Arena in Talla. I'm delighted to say that I've been joined by their manager Rick Leonard, their captain Eddie Sheehy, and their Mitchells player. We'll let him out, and that's Daniel Bowler, of course, which is absolutely fantastic to see. Guys, first of all, huge congratulations. I mean, we don't get enough national titles, and it's great to see the National Cup, and poor old Eddie brought it in this evening. I don't know, did you take it home already, Eddie? Go on, put it back up there. Yes, absolutely. You'll never get tired of lifting it up. First of all, Rick, I mean, what does this mean to the club? This must be fantastic.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, we were coaching a great bunch of lads. I'm actually the assistant coach / manager. We give a shout out to Luke O'Hay, who's coached these guys all year. But it's been a fantastic journey with these guys. It's been a great bunch of guys, like I said, and we went undefeated for the season. And you know, it just came to a big, you know, hit on Friday night when we can put all the hard work and training together and come away from Talla with the cup. Yeah. And we will enjoy this.
Absolutely, and you're well entitled to enjoy it, Eddie. I suppose captain, of course, but captain of a team, so you wouldn't be there without the team and all the hard work that they do. Through the year, did you know that there was something special within this group, that the cup at the end of the table was something that was achievable, or do you know game by game, or where during the season did you say this is hugely achievable for us?
Definitely, yeah. I think at the start of the year it was kind of a new setup, new manager, new assistant coach, new players. Obviously we got very close last year, we lost UC in the same final, but this year there was something about the team. I don't know, better chemistry, just everyone kind of was great friends to train, and there was no kind of people didn't like each other and like that, you know, everyone loved each other, and that's one of the reasons I think we won this year out of last year. It was a better atmosphere of training. It was always, we always got a good scrimmage on Friday nights, 2 hours with Luke O'Hay and Rick, and yeah, definitely I think the team itself. I was lucky enough to be selected as captain, but any of the boys, Dan could be selected as captain, Ivers could be selected as captain, anyone. But yeah, definitely the team definitely showed it on Friday night, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dan, it's an interesting word Eddie brought up, chemistry, because I mean basketball is a sport where there's just five guys on the court at the one time, and you really all need to be kind of synced in together. You got that feeling all through the year with the boys?
Yeah, of course. Straight away, first training session, Eddie brought us in together. Luke, we hadn't met Luke before, and Joe, you know, he was just trying to set up what we wanted, But straight away you could see everyone knew each other well. We were joking and joking, but when it came down to it, when it came to the tight nitty gritty stuff, everyone knew what to do. We knew who had to score, who had to set the screens. I think everyone was in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Rick, from playing basketball for nearly forever, I suppose you're still playing it, of course you haven't given up at all yet. Chemistry is a hugely important part of basketball. I mean, getting the team right, it's like the boys saying, knowing who does what role well. You have your shooter, you have your guys going to work hard, you're going to set the screen, boys, the guys that'll take the shots, the guys that'll decoy themselves a whole lot. How important is that to get that right at the very start of the season, so as you go through the season the results start rolling in?
It's very important. Like I said, you know, I can't say it enough, and Luke says it as well. The guys, they were a great bunch of guys, you know, from the outset, and the chemistry was there. There was no egos. Even when, you know, Iris was out a couple of games at the beginning, I think he was on international duties or something there. He was out. So, you know, the guys picked up the slack, and we played. And when he came back in, there was no egos. You know, he came in, he slotted right in, started, you know, we kept going with what we were doing. We were winning. The chemistry was there. Whenever we went on a road trip, we had good fun, good laughs. In training sessions, there was always, you know, the banter, laughs, and joking. But everybody knew their role, and I think that's key with any level. Just kind of guys knowing their role, not stepping outside of what they can do on the court and what they can do for the team. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge part. There was none of that. We had Eddie, as I said, you know, and Eddie knows this, that I have the utmost respect for him. I think he's probably one of, if not the best, point guard at this level, under 20s, at this level, who controlled the game for us. You know, Dan was our main scorer before Iris came in, and then himself and Iris then shared that role in a lot of games. You know, Donald, you know, Gary, all those guys came in and played a role, and they accepted their role, whatever role Luke gave them, in any position that they played. You know, and Luke said it to him the other day when we had a few celebrations there. You know, he said the guys came in, and whatever was asked of them, they did it. Mm-hmm. So there was no egos in the team, and I don't think, you know, except for, you know, Friday night when there was everything got a little tense. It got a little tense there for a few minutes.
It got very tense because I was checking in the game, of course, on the scoreline. I mean, Eddie at one stage, you were nearly on the way home at half time. Were you 20 plus points up? But basketball is that kind of game. You take your eye off the ball for 90 seconds and teams can start loading trees on top of you. Titans obviously had great character that they didn't say at half time, we're going home, we're going to have a right crack at you.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, to all the Titans boys, we've been playing them throughout the years in school games. Most of them play for the Bish in Galway City. And I played them in third year in under-16 final, semi-final of the National Cup. We were up 10 points 4 minutes ago and they beat us. So I knew Titans were always going to come back some stage. It just happened to be in the fourth quarter and we were up by 17 points, so they happened to come back. But we all knew, even when they were about to come back, we had it in the bag. Like, we knew like what we were capable of. We knew, even because we were missing and they were scoring, we knew we could control the tempo of the game, and that's what we did. But fair play to Titans, you know, what a team, not fair to them. And you know, even if they beat us, we'd have respect for them, because we beat them fair and square, and if they beat us, they would beat us fair and square. But we deserved it at night, I think. So yeah,
absolutely. Daniel, speak to us about the school tradition. Obviously we're talking about the clubs, but I mean, schools in Tralee, it's immersed in basketball. I mean, it's nearly, I won't say it's the number one sport because the GAA people will be giving out, but it's getting up there. I mean, there's more people now that take their basketball so seriously down to the level, and obviously there's outs and there's national team places, and obviously, like I said, we have Iris on the Irish team as well, which is absolutely fantastic, and a couple more as well with him in the men and women's side of things. But speak to us about the role of the schools.
Yeah, I think first of all, it has started off with John Dowling with Mount Hawk and Lindsay Moriarty and Jimmy Diggins. Joe, they have a great system over there now. Like, they take you in the first year, they take care of you all the way through on the basketball teams. Joe, I can't say enough about them. Joe, they take care of me all the time. John's always texting me before the big games saying, good luck, and you know, he just takes care of you. And also the likes of Fergal O'Sullivan as well for club basketball, he's been brilliant. You know, he's coaching my younger brother now. Like, it's, if you have a coach who can show you the things and give you the time, it really pushes you on. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing.
And of course, it is a big deal. I mean, if you get a text from John Dowling, I mean, the double winning manager of last year, you know, of huge quality, I mean, that gives you that extra 10% going out in the court, I'd imagine.
Oh, it does, yeah. You know, especially, like, he, you know, he doesn't have to text you, but he does, because he loves basketball, and he loves to see lads kind of, he comes in first year, you're 12, 13 years of age, and he sees you progress as a boy to like a man, you're 19, 18, and like he does put in the effort, and it is brilliant for him.
Mm-hmm. Eddie, we're talking about the journey, and we won't say it ends here. I mean, it's just on the way, but where did the journey start for you? Obviously, like, where did you get your first basketball? Obviously, you're in the Gael, man. Of course, football was somewhere along the way, but where did basketball come into your life?
Well, I started playing basketball. I was 6 years old down in Wetherwell, St. Brendan's, obviously. I always loved basketball, but I also played a bit of the Gaa as well. But basketball was always number one. But when I came to first year in Mount Hope,
what made it number one? Why was it that little bit more special?
Just something about basketball in winter was just great, just the skill of it. And I love watching it always. And like when I went the first year in Mount Hope, as I was saying, with John Dowling, like, that man has done so much for me and Dan and all the other Mount Hope boys. And all the club people, so Garrett Moore, another person, he's assistant coach of the Warriors. The things they've done for me, like, throughout the years, I wouldn't be nowhere near as where I am if I didn't have two of them. And like, John took me in first year, and he met me in the summer, and he'd be training me in the summer. And even when I was playing school basketball with John, and Garrett was my basketball coach in clubs. So it's kind of funny that they're coach and assistant coach now with the Warriors. But they gave me all that IQ and everything, and all the steps and how to do this and how to do that and all different ways of doing things. And I wouldn't be the point guard I am at the moment without two of them, so big shout out to them. So yeah.
Point guard, Rick, to the people listening, I mean, people call him the small Napoleons of the court, you know. It is a bit bigger than the small Napoleons, you know. But it's they're the quarterback, really, of the court, aren't they?
Of course, like I say in my post, I call him Eddie the Maestro. He pulls the strings for the team. Without him controlling, you know, the tempo with his pace, getting to the basket, setting the likes of Dan up, Iris up, you know, just setting all the team up, you know, we wouldn't be able to go. You know, he is the engine. He has a great engine on him, thankfully, you know, because he clocked up a lot of miles on those legs over the 8 games. I don't think he missed many minutes. And again, I think, but besides the game, he didn't play, I think, you know, that was the only kind of break he really got all season. Even though, you know, we tried to get him a few minutes here and there, but, you know, without your point guard, without a decent point guard on your team, you know, the team really doesn't run properly. You know, it's like oil, engine, whatever. If you don't have a proper, you know, engine in your car, is not going to run.
We were here last year, and of course, it's amazing how a year flies away. It was nearly this time last year, and we were talking, obviously, about the Warriors, the big Warriors, the senior boys, not these little kids that we have in front of us. And we were talking about creating a culture, and forgive me if I'm wrong, I think since you reformed the Tralee Warriors, every year there was a cup of note put on the table, you know, whether it was a President's Cup or a Champions Cup or whatever it was, or last year it was two of them. This continues the tradition. There's a tradition of winning in the club, and it's obviously, I suppose, we can go back to Tralee Tigers and we can talk about the culture that was there, but it's a new identity as such, Gary, Tralee Warriors. But this is going to add greatly to that legacy and certainly push it forward even more.
It will indeed, because, you know, like you said, look, since we started, thankfully, I've been in around since the beginning, probably the beginning of the time, since I've been almost 30 years. But, you know, since we've been, there has been, unfortunately, the senior men didn't bring something home, but the guys brought something back to town for us today, which was a huge achievement for the club, for the town, for basketball itself, because
it's a national title.
It is a national title.
Well, we all like love to go out and win the county, and it's huge. Yeah. But this is the national. I mean, and it's not kind of a national title where you're playing maybe four or five counties as such. I mean, basketball spreads the world over, and it's Dublin strong, Belfast is strong, Galway obviously with the Titans is strong, a lot of culture there in Limerick as well. So it's a champion title of huge note.
Yeah, I say we would have probably played the best from most counties. There we played, you know, Cork, Neptune, Demons, two historically great clubs there, Tolka, Dublin, Galway, Limerick. So, you know, the competition was fierce. You know, and thankfully, you know, we were able to keep them at bay and fight them off a bit. But, you know, it was great competition throughout.
Now, the last question that I know the answer is going to be no, but did you ever see this guy playing his prime? Surely you saw the videos, did you?
Sadly not, no.
Okay. Rick, come on, you have to bring the videos out. When I was probably your size and a little bit smaller, I mean, this guy was a legend. He was like, you're still cool, Rick, okay? But by God, you were cool back then. you were the king of cool.
In saying that, I did bring home my own, medal as well yesterday with the Masters Cup as well. from Tala. So
That's nearly cheating, you know, that you're so good.
No, well, you know, I was playing with the younger guys, I can say younger guys in the over 40 section at this stage now. So, you know, I play with, you know, because I did play with Neptune as well and won a title with Neptune. I, you know, kind of went back and
we edited that bit from the podcast now. We want to appreciate.
But anyway, you know, we won the National Masters Cup as well for the over 40s yesterday. So, like you said, basketball is growing, and now Basketball Ireland, you know, is just bringing it on, that, you know, we at my age can continue playing a bit and can continue that spirit of the sport. But these guys will be kind of role models for the next generation. As I said, Daniel's brother is playing, he's a heck of a player coming up, and there's a lot of other players. So we hope that, like you said, you know, every year since the Warriors have been in, you know, been back in the league, there's been some sort of trophy that come through. And you talk about that 10%, you know, and we have to give props to these guys' parents, the fans that still went up to an under-20s game, mm-hmm. you know, because Warriors, you know, we got a bus. We had a few fans on the bus, but the amount of fans that journeyed in cars up on the Friday evening, some of the Warriors senior team showed up, a lot of fans showed up, and, you know, it's just great to see the basketball, the community, and everybody coming for these young fellas, for Warriors in general. And obviously we have to thank our sponsors. I can't go without saying, you know, Garvey's, you know, is massive. I know he, you know, sponsors a lot of sports in Kerry, but he's been a great ambassador and sport and sponsor for these guys. Myself, when I first came here 30 years ago, you know, we had Garvey's, we have McDonald's, Cara, you know, if I miss anybody, but all our sponsors, O'Neill's, McDonald's, and these guys were fed then at Benner's after home games, Benner's and O'Sullivan's, the Greyhound Bar, again, who fed me 30 years ago. Exactly. The whole community is backing kind of Warriors.
It does take a village to rear the champions.
It is.
Isn't it?
You can't have this much success without having people behind you. Yeah. You know, and we have some good people behind us.
Super. Huge congratulations to Garvey's Tralee Warriors. They went undefeated all year, and future looks bright for this squad. Hopefully it won't be too long before we see them playing for the senior team. That's Kevin O'Donoghue. Congrats to St. Mary's. Of course, St. Mary's always have to get in the thing. I'm winning the under-14s All-Ireland and absolutely congratulations to them out there in Castle Island. Congratulations to the under-20s. Eddie, you're a fantastic captain. Dan Bowler and all the team, outstanding and proud to be part of the Warriors family. Absolutely. Speak to us about the Warriors family, Eddie. I mean, you obviously probably spend your nights below in the complex watching all the games, do you? Sitting there watching them, or are you actually on the bench?
when the Warriors started in the beginning, best thing ever, even Daniel says, best thing ever is going to the complex on Saturday night watching the Americans play. Like, sure, that's all you want to see, like, when you're in sixth class first year looking at these guys dunking the ball and stuff. Like, obviously at this stage now, we're the ones dunking the ball now, like nearly. And
does he dunk a ball, did he, or is he just
I'm getting close. But obviously the atmosphere down the complex Saturday night is savage, and obviously hopefully one day me and Dan
and
can
it
be
is
the ones
the,
playing
the
there.
Atmosphere is something electric about it. I mean, it's the music, it's the noise, it's the light, maybe it's even the fact that there's so many people packed up together, and when the seats are empty you say, how in the name of God will that many people fit in there in the first place? But it is absolutely packed, and they go all the way around the court, and maybe sometimes they're even sitting nearly on the bench beside you. That atmosphere that adds to great basketball.
Definitely. Like the complex, we packed an hour before the game's even starting. Like, you have to get in there an hour and a half if you want to get a good seat and whatnot. And we were there obviously years ago, but now we might be the people that would be on the court instead of watching the game now, hopefully. But yeah, the atmosphere definitely. Like, even the atmosphere last day in Tala, like, I couldn't believe the atmosphere there. Like, it felt like the ground was shaking when you were playing the game. Like, it was unbelievable when we were scoring and whatever. And even when we were down, the Titans crowd were going mad, you know, with their team, whatever. But even that one basket or two baskets that we might get, it get to put us back in the game, you could hear our crowd absolutely beating drums and whatever. So yeah, it was savage, not to be honest.
That's great. Daniel, where does the journey go from here? Are you still under 20 next year?
No, sadly, it's last year.
You're leaving 20. The family. Eddie, are you there next year?
Yeah.
Is there many more of you there next year?
Yeah, pretty much the whole squad. One or two might be gone, but
you're the old man of the family.
I'm the old man. Gone. It was the last dance for me. So,
where do you go now? Are you knocking on that door to John Dowling? You send him the text back and say, "Hi, do you remember me? You text me there before you're starting Gert for me next year."
I have a long summer to think anyway, because I'm up in Limerick for college. So. So next season I might be with the Warriors, or I might be with Limerick. So
Me and Dan, got to the final 2 years ago in Tella, or last year in Tella.
Yeah.
And we lost by a point to St. Malachy's, and that was the worst loss we ever had in our lives, because it was the A Cup, and Dan was leaving me because I was in 5th year, he was in 6th year. And to win this now just made it 10 times better, because that kind of loss stayed with us since every time I was in Tala after that. I could remember that loss we had, but to win this now, it kind of just that memory's gone out the window now, because we have to win the under 20 National League, so it's brilliant.
Sometimes it does take a loss to push you on a little bit more. I mean, you can be winning everything all the way through, but that loss obviously was a bit of a kick in the teeth, was it?
Oh, definitely. I mean, when you're so close to winning National Cup, sorry, an All-Ireland A Cup at schools. Obviously, I went for second year, I won one or whatever, but winning the senior is the big one. And obviously, we got so close, but we couldn't get there. But these under 20 National Leagues make up for all that loss. So, yeah.
Dan, of course, you're not giving me any information other than that you're touting for business and you might be going to Limerick next year, obviously, a contract or whatever it is. There is a huge basketball in universities as well. I mean, it just doesn't stop, like, you know, here you move in. That InterVarsity in itself, I mean, there's a lot of talented basketballers playing there as well.
Yeah, there is. Just this weekend coming up now, there's the College Varsity, so I'll be playing with UL. But college basketball is brilliant. Like, the atmosphere in UL, there's four courts across the place. There's teams from Galway, Dublin, everyone comes to play it. But yeah, it's brilliant.
Look at us, man. Carry you.
An MTU carrier fan as well.
We finally made it to the big time. Listen, Rick, we'll probably wrap up now, because the people say, my God, oh my, it's 25 past 6 and you're still talking basketball, and we could talk it for another hour. Rick, where do you see the future of these boys, and indeed the team itself? I mean, they need to be kept in some sort of system. I mean, you can't just make great basketballs up to under 20. There has to be somewhere else. Where does the progression go?
I think both clubs are doing a fantastic job. St. Brendan's and Tralee Magic. I had to get that right now. They changed the name. They're doing a fantastic job of
integrating players.
Firstly, integrating into the Warriors, but before they get to the chance to integrate into the Warriors, they have to be at club level as well. So Fergal O'Sullivan has great academy going there. John, Jimmy, some of the players from the Warriors, and are doing the Magic Academy. So they have to start at the grassroots, as we call it there, and bringing them up. So they're doing a great job. And as for these guys, the future is bright for these guys. You know, it's unfortunate that, you know, under 20s, and like we only have one National League team here in Tralee. Like, you know, you have 12 guys on the panel, guys want to play. There's more guys coming through than there is seats on the bench, so to speak. It's a good thing on one hand, but a bad thing for the, like I said, the guys who probably want to stay home and stay in Tralee, but they need to be playing basketball. And he's in college; he needs to concentrate on college as well. Traveling back and forth kind of hints that. So I myself, I'm kind of working with MTU. I coach the MTU team, Kerry team. So hopefully we can work together. And, you know, I've been talking to Eddie and talked to a few guys and seeing what we can do as MTU Kerry to try to keep players in college in Kerry so that they can stay home. Because, you know, it is, you know, I want him to play wherever he can, but, you know, it's a pity that he can't stay home. But we understand that he's in college, and, you know, education, it plays a big part for in his life as well. So, you know, we hope, you know, we wish him the best. We wish all the guys the best. You know, we have about, there's only two guys missing from this year's under 20
team. Hard for the boys trying to get into the team next year if there's only two places up for
that's a good thing. That'll be, hopefully that's a good thing for Luke. The competition then will be there for places, and then we hope that there's a lot of people that watch these guys this year that want to fight for those places.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, guys, we could talk all night, but we'll have to take a commercial break. Jim Garvey giving out to me, you know, around the corner. So listen, guys, thanks very much. Delighted to have you on board and in tonight. Eddie, great to chat to you.
Thanks for having us.
And Rick, you'll be back again next year with another team that you'll have coached or won or something like that, will you?
Oh, yeah, we'll, you know, our team, we'll look to continue on from the success. I'm sure there'll be a target on our back, but, you know, we aim to take up that challenge.
Absolutely. But sure, you've got big backs in you, sure. Big
yes,
backs,
indeed.
big targets. Sure, you know, let the boys see. Listen, thanks very much, and we'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Oh, it was a very busy weekend for our young hurlers of the kingdom, as both the minors and under-20s were in action in the Leinster Championship. And it's fair to say that, you know, it was a pretty good weekend for both sides. The minors, while not winning, certainly put up a very creditable performance. And the under-20s, well, they went on to beat Carlow in their Tier 2 opener in the Leinster Championship as well. And to talk about that, maybe, and look a bit ahead to Joe McDonough, which is starting next weekend. I mean, there's absolutely no break. We're talking about the league last week, and now we're on about the Championship, and it's just the first week of April. It's just amazing how things have changed. But two things that haven't changed anyways: James McCarthy and Rich Darder for all. We're both on the line. Thanks very much, guys, for joining us this evening. Delighted to have you. Rich Darder, first of all, before we'll just chat on the minors and under-20s, I want to talk a small bit about them guys now tonight and give them a little bit more. The Offaly result, first of all, and we'll put that to bed straight away, Offaly winning the league, did you see that coming?
Well, I'm still very disappointed, because I felt, and at the beginning I felt that we had a great chance of winning Division 2A, and I feel we left it after us, to be very honest with you. And as James said earlier on, I think that winning 2A would be much more beneficial than winning the Joe McDonough. Now, you win the Joe McDonough, you get one game, like last year it's Cork or Wexford. But if you win 2A, you get a good few games against top opposition. Mm-hmm. You know, you're playing obviously against the likes of Antrim and Leash, to be similar to ourselves. But you also get an opportunity to play the likes of Waterford. And that would bring on Kerry Hurling an awful lot. It would progress an awful lot. And I think it's an opportunity missed. I mean, they drew previously, so it was going to be a tight game last weekend, but at the end of the day, Offaly got through, and good luck to them, and up they go. But I'm still very disappointed, because I think it's an opportunity missed for Kerry Hurling.
I think possibly it slipped through the fingers, maybe. But I saw that Joe McDonough had come along. Let's get back to the minors. James, last week we were talking about the minors and saying how difficult it was in Tier 1. I mean, they were up against really the big Leinster teams, and obviously we were discussing the fact that they came from Tier 1 Munster. They had to kind of maybe serve a penance, kind of as such, if that's the right word, for a year or so before maybe they find their own feet. But they certainly found their own feet, I felt, in that performance against Offaly, who are certainly a very good minor team.
Definitely, I think, you know, it's the lads they'd be happy, if we could call it that, mm-hmm. because it's, as you said, it's all on the finalists last year. Often it's no weaklings you're playing, it's still Tier 1, and they'll be happy with it, but they're still, they know themselves, they set up differently, they have to set up differently. It's all about getting used to your surroundings, and we found that the U20s found that Saturday as well. you will be, you're in a different environment. It's not, the hurling's going to be different, the level is going to be different, so you've got to get comfortable, and it's going to take you a game or two. Even the first game out, you forgive them the first game out. This is their second game out, Eric. They knew what to expect, what was coming down the road from Offaly. I know Offaly's panel from last year, the last lad, they're strong minors from last year, like, but still a very, very good team. But the lads would have been happy, but as you say, it's what, how do you measure that? What are you measuring off of? So, like, they're going to play Dublin next now, and that's going to be really, really tough, because we have watched Dublin play before. We've watched this Dublin minor team. We've seen video of them, and they're really a very, very good team. So it's going to be a tough, very tough game. Like, there is no let up at this tier for Kerry minors, and I wish them the best, because the lads are, there's a lot of work done in there. There's a huge, huge amount of work gone into it. Like, and I'd like to see another good, positive result for the lads, and maybe, as you said, maybe the penance has been served now. Let's get us into our proper, set up a proper tier we should be in for next year, and hopefully kick on from there again.
Richard, we seem to be in the proper tier when it comes to the under-20s. I mean, for years, I suppose, we watched the Munster Championships, and while we were always kind of competitive for maybe 20, 25 minutes, or maybe even up to half-time, we kind of always kind of maybe fell away against the stronger teams, the Tips and the Corks and the whole lot, even though, I suppose, you know, the initial effort was always decent and always very honest. But a win for the under-20s against Carlow, don't give the other fellow too much of a big head, but, you know, how important was that?
It was very important, and to go back to the minors, I suppose I'm still a bit confused as to why they were put into tier one. We should be quite clear that we're a tier two team, but anyway, as you said, they'll serve their opinions, and hopefully, you know, they'll find their proper tier two, playing against like Carlow and Westmeath, and, you know, teams that are at our level. But a great win by the under-20s. You know, they've worked really hard, they've trained really hard, and it was a great boost for Kerry Hurling to go up there. And I think that, you know, that they played from the very beginning of the game. They played well, they played confidently, and deserved their win. So next up now is Kildare on Monday. So, great boost for Kerry Hurling to see the under-20s winning.
Mm-hmm. James, how important was that win?
It was for this bunch of lads, so that they're actually a really, really good team. And I even talked to Sean Manson and Tig and all the lads in the management team, Jonathan says, they deserve huge credit. Even when they look at what they've done with these in the 20s, I go back to our time, Donald Jesus. No, this is a long time ago. Don't take my word for it, but we would have done.
It's been a while since you've been under 20, James.
We were doing very good.
Were you watching Glen Rowe around that time too, were you?
Next training, Glen Rowe was on. But no, the under 21s, that time, we wouldn't have done anywhere near the level of the lads have done. They've had 50 sessions and 15 challenge games. That's what you need. That's where you got to be. If you want to be serious about this thing, you got to get to that level. And last Saturday for us even was huge. Like, we didn't maybe play to full potential, but you were probably 12 and 13 points a better team than Carlow. But it's just a matter of getting used to surroundings, maybe getting used to playing at this level. It's maybe a flat spot there just after halftime for a little while, but regain composure, and we're still good enough in the end to hold out and comfortable at that. But Kildare is going to be a different animal. They played Leash, I think it was last weekend as well, and were there tit for tat right up to half time. Then they had a man sent off after half time. Changed the game, complexion of the game totally. So that's going to be a real test Monday now. But there's a serious job in doing these lads, and I expect big things from these lads. And even, don't know, an interesting fact from that game, there was a four on, another four on, he came on, and he said, even there was the four on name going well on hurling behind.
Did he play better than the father used to?
He gets it from his mother. He gets it from his mother.
Right, okay. Did he stay on the field? Is the question, though?
I'm not a James McCarthy.
He didn't pull wild or anything. Richard, it's great that we're talking about a win, of course, and the under-20s, but the fact that it's kind of a group stage, that they get a second game and a third game, that they, you know, that they do get a bit of time together, that all bodes well going into the future, even at this level for them.
Yeah, and I suppose going back to the seniors, as we were saying earlier on, as James has always said, like, you know, to get a number of games, not just one game and you're gone, but to get a number of games really brings you on. And that's what the under-20s are going to get here now. You know, they're going to get a good few games, and most importantly, that is going to be at their level. And that'll bring them on, and that's what you need. You need a number of games, and you need then to see the progression. And I think that, you know, the amount of work they have done, I think that they are a very, very good bunch, and you know, I'm looking forward to the game on Monday now, and I think that, you know, we need to move on. I know we played B hurling for a number of years, but this is where you want to be.
playing against these teams, and you know, and to raise the standard of Kerry hurling, which is vitally important.
Mm-hmm. James, just kind of a strange question, I suppose. What's the head shoot to the Leinster counties that you meet that they're coming up against the likes of Kerry?
I think, you know, that there was I think Clare boys were, there were no problems. I didn't see any problems anywhere at all. Really, they kind of see it as like, you could say Antrim were in there, Galway were in there. It's like an open championship, really. Like, we've talked about the provincial setup as even in senior along for many years now, don't you know? Except though, mm-hmm. like, you really have only two championships. You've got the Leinster and the Munster. So could you come to a place where you say, right, why not have an open draw and have two groups? Could be from anywhere. You could have Cork, then Galway. You could have maybe Kilkenny playing Tip. Maybe have just two groups, like that kind of thing, or even at the top tiers, and break it down like that. You can see this. There isn't the Leinster teams above. They're happy to get these games because they know, right, Kerry are our level, Antrim are our level. They have no problem with that. So maybe even looking up towards, they've always given out about the provincial structures and this and that. Maybe it's a thing, right? Get rid of the Munster Championship, get rid of the Leinster Championship. Could we say that? I don't know. Maybe I'm not the fella to say that, but you could see something like that. Like you saw in football, going the Super 8s or that kind of thing. Something like that. You could have a Super 8 in Ireland, two sides, like, but maybe that could happen. But no, as far as we're concerned, I think this is perfect for us. Mm-hmm. Perfect. You've Carlow, Kildare, Leash. Each one of them, I think, is a little step. Kildare will be another little step, then I think Leash will be another little step again. But I think these lads, as you can see it now, Donny, you know, when you get around a bunch of lads, you can feel they're really buying into it. And they have to, that goes down to the management team. I know even they're short minded, the lads, like, but the management team that have been there all year, they are really got these lads tuned in. And I think I'd expect big things from them. I think get over these three games. Not saying get over them, like, but just put them out of your way. Like, you have to win every one of them and be careful about every one of them, because you have to approach it totally different. It's going to be a different setup now against Kildare. Maybe there might have more. You can see yourself from Kildare senior hurlers, like, this is going to be a serious outfit, and Leash are going to be a serious outfit. So you have two real tough games coming up, but that'll set you up. Then your last game, maybe a Leinster quarterfinal, hopefully get to that point, see where you are, and really have a right go at that. And that'll be, you think should be after three games, confidence high, play that game, have a right go. It's like a free shot. It's a free shot, though, to me. That's a free shot. You get the quarterfinal Leinster Championship, that's a free shot. Bang. What can Kerry do here? Maybe we rise to the occasion, get to semi final. Hopefully that'll be there. Great result.
Mm-hmm. Looking for great results, of course. Richard, John McDonough is just around the corner. Down away we start, which is next week as well. Stephen Malumpy met the media there on Sunday morning, and he was kind of talking about different things. And he kind of half admitted that we left the Offaly game behind us. There were his words, I'm nearly sure that we left it behind us. But he was also on about creating scoring chances, that we are creating a lot more. He said maybe we're not as accurate as we should be, but we are creating a lot more chances. We will need to be quite accurate when we go to Down next weekend.
We will indeed, and we are creating the scoring chances, but I suppose he has always said we should be up on the 70%, and we are on the 50% mark, and that won't do, I suppose, you know. Ballycran is not going to be easy. We found it tough up there the last few occasions, and actually we found it tough in Oxford Stack Park as well, against Down. It's a very tight pitch, and you know, Nelson made here that Mikey will be missing. So it's going to be a big ask going up there. We'll have to bring our A game, as I say, up there, because it's going to be a really tough game and a massive challenge up there in Ballycran.
Mm-hmm. James, does the confirmation that Mikey Boyle won't be in that game anyway, and he's racing for fitness maybe for round two or even round three, does that tip the scales slightly away from us again?
I don't know, Donnelly. Kind of, you can. Maybe Stephen Murphy has. I think he's probably factored this in. Mikey's been kind of trying to get back to fitness. Like, he's probably right. He's been trying to walk around, and he knew himself he probably would be around without him. Like, so he's probably gone away with different ideas. Like, but it is going to be. He's a big loss. Big loss. Experience. What he's done before for us, and what he can do for us, what he can bring to the team. Maybe we might need that as the games go on. Hopefully, get over this game without needing Mikey as such. But we will need Mikey as we get on the line. And I think, as I said, all about this group, like, it's going to be tough. But you'd hope that the lads get another lift again. Going back to the league, about the talk you said, talked to Richard earlier about the league and Offaly and all that. Look, we lost two games in the league. Whatever we want to say about it, we were not. Offaly won every game in the league. Best team won the league. I know we can call it a missed opportunity. Yes, I was giving out about it. But looking at it in the cold light of day, Kildare were second best, Offaly were the best, we were third best, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. You don't get the top prize by being third.
Yeah. Kildare, my comment in here from PJ, listens every week. Kildare Miners in Tier 2 of the Leinster Minor Championship, they scored 925 last weekend against Wicklow and 323 the weekend before, so hopefully next year they'll be in Tier 1 and our Miners will be in Tier 2. I suppose it's a big ask of the Miners. And they're huge results. I mean, but it just goes to show you that there's a lot of lopsided results in that Leinster Minor Championship, doesn't it?
I think Wicklow and Hathaway is there at all. There's a couple of teams in that in the lower tiers there in Leinster are not at the race at all. And that's not been unkind to them. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that they would feel themselves that they're not able for that. Like Kildare are not. They shouldn't be in that level at all. Kildare are way better than that. You know yourself. I would put Kildare on par with Dublin. At that age group at the minute, where they've moved on and what they've done, they really have kicked on. And like, it seems to be just a whole, like, a rising tide lifts all boats. Kildare hurling at the minute is buoyant, in fairness, so we'll have to be careful ourselves on Monday. It's going to be a tight one. We'll have to be very careful. So it's just, you're going to get freak results like that, I think. And maybe it's just some teams just aren't able for it. Teams of good farmers going to put you to the sword.
Well, fair play to you. Don't be putting too many people to the sword now when you leave there, James, this evening of yours. Put your sword back in your scabbard. Come here, boys. Thanks very much. And we'll join you again next week and every other week, of course, after that, keeping tabs on the Joe McDonough team. That was James McCarthy and Richard O'Foran, and we'll go to a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, hi Donal, congratulations to the Tralee Warriors, under 20s on their cup win. They're a great group of young people doing great work in that club, and I'm looking forward to your chat with that guy running in the desert. That'll be some challenge. That comes in from Charles, and of course the man running in the desert, of course, is Clarny man Brian Foley. He's busy preparing for the Marathon de Stable, which is it's a 6-day event, 251 kilometre ultramarathon. It's held every year, of course, in southern Morocco, but southern Morocco becomes far more exotic when some says it's running across the Sahara Desert, and it's regarded as the toughest race, foot race, of course, on earth. And I'm absolutely delighted to have Brian on the line. I was going to start off, Brian, by asking you how mad you were and why you'd done all this, but I mean, obviously I've read through the whole lot, but I mean it's for a huge great cause. Maybe we'll get the cause out of the way first and what it's doing for and the context of it, and then we'll talk about this mad Killarney man running across the desert maybe.
Thanks, Donald. So the causes that I'm running for are Youth Suicide Prevention Ireland, and that's a charity that's headquartered in Killarney. And what they do is they work with young people to teach them all about their mental health and how to look after their mental health. So it's a really, really worthy cause. And the other one, a lot of more people will be familiar with, is Pieta House, who work with suicide prevention as well. And deal with, I suppose, the families of people who pass away from suicide. So two mental health charities that I'm running for.
It's hugely important, I suppose, in this day and age as well. And of course, a lot of people talk about mental health and I suppose what you can do outside it as well. And one of the things is keeping fit. I'm obviously talking and it helps with keeping fit. But you're taking it to the complete extreme. The Marathon of the Minds, is it?
That's the project I've set up. So Marathons for the Mind is this little project that I set up that I thought I'd set myself a few challenges. Got a few people involved, a few friends involved. So this ultramarathon in Morocco at the end of the month is kind of the big part of it. There's been a few more challenges. The Kerry Way Ultra last year. I might give another tilt at that this year. I'm planning on doing another marathon on a rowing machine, a skiing machine, and a bike in the middle of the summer as well. So, projects to raise funds.
Yeah, you like putting yourself through torture, don't you? Come here to me. Tell us about the one in the Sahara, please, because I mean, I was reading there's 1,200 people running it, and I was looking at some of the things that you must do. They give you 6.5 litres of water, and they tell you run off there and don't throw it in the sand. Make sure you bring it back and refill it, and the whole lot. This, even though we're laughing at it, I mean, this is a serious event.
Yeah. I mean, it's no joke at all. So I've been training for a year now. So you're set off on day one of the 6 days, and everything is self-supported apart from the water. You set off with your backpack with all your food for the 6 days and whatever medical supplies you need. So you run from point to point You get supplied water along the way, and then you sleep essentially under a large carpet held up by sticks every night. And that's pretty much it. It's a fairly meagre existence for the 6 days, totally self-supported. So you've got to bring your cooking implements and everything else. So the bag will weigh around 9 to 10 kilos, depending on how hungry I feel, I guess.
Wow. So you have to sustain yourself across those 6 days. It's not like I can just check in at the local burger joint down here in the corner that some fella just put up there in the corner of the beach or somewhere. But I mean, you really are. And it's a competitive one, but it's obviously for people that are kind of well used to these. I mean, but you're running your first one, are you? Or have you run one before?
I've taken part in ultras before. So the first one would have been, I suppose, about 8 years ago in Australia. I did the Surf Coast Trail, which is down on the Great Ocean Road, when we were living down in Melbourne. And I suppose I got the bug for it then. Last year, I did the Kerryway Ultra with a couple of buddies. We did it as a relay team. But this is the first one that's anything like this. And, you know, I suppose this is totally different.
And come here to me, Roisin is delighted you're going, or is she going with you?
Thankfully, she is putting our 2-year-old to bed, so she's not listening in. I wouldn't say delighted. She's just ignoring the fact that I'm going, I'd say, until the day that I set off.
You better tell her, tis only around the corner, isn't it? It's not that many days away.
Yeah. I'm not telling her the full details. I'm telling her, of course, that there's a corner shop at every stage, and I'll be able to stop in for a cup of coffee in the morning and whatnot.
Jesus, I could email her the 37 pages of do's and don'ts about doing it and the checkpoints and the dropping out, the elimination, the whole lot. 1,200 people doing it. I mean, obviously, I mean, you're competing at your own level and the whole lot. But the attraction for this, I mean, this isn't like, I mean, the boys were on earlier for the team sport, basketball, and other fellas kind of run marathons. What's the attraction? What drew you to this? I mean, obviously, you mentioned that you've done an ultra before, and you've done 2 or 3 of them, I suppose, in the past. But what's the attraction? Why does Brian Foley wake up in the morning and say, I'll do this, as opposed to road Flesk Valley down the lake, maybe?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, it's a valid question. And if I had a very simple answer to give you in the next 5 minutes, you know, it'd be the nicest thing to answer. I don't have the simplest answer in the world. Like, I played team sports growing up. I love team sports. I love social aspects. I run a gym here in Killarney that's very much based around the social aspect and working together. But I guess solo endeavours like this, I think people like to challenge themselves, and I'd be that type of person. I probably hadn't challenged myself for a number of years. The pandemic's threw a big spanner in the works for a lot of people, I suppose. Again, if we're talking about mental health, a lot of people spent a bit too much time in their own heads and didn't get to socialise enough. I guess that's one of the driving forces to go and challenge myself with something that's a little bit scary. I think if you don't put something in front of yourself that scares you a little bit, it's probably not a big enough challenge for you. Mm-hmm. That'd be my thinking anyway.
Yeah, well, there's certainly enough in that marathon to scare a lot of people. I love the way when it says each participant must carry his or her own backpack containing food, sleeping gear and other material. And then it says down at the bottom in very little writing, should you get lost in the desert, water reserves could be vital. So hopefully you will not be getting lost in the desert. But it is that. Is it a certain track, obviously, that you're running? I mean, the points are designated. Are you going by GPS, or do you know that you're going 20 kilometres this direction and that way?
I suppose, yeah, and this is part of the allure of the whole thing, I suppose, and it would frighten some people, but you don't actually know what the route is until you get to Morocco. You have a fair... I know, that's the beauty of it. You have a fair idea.
I hope Roisin is still putting the child to bed.
I'd say he'd give her a bit of butter for another hour. We'll be okay. So, yeah, you don't find out until you get there. You get a general idea. So the first 3 days are typically between 30 and 40 kilometres. The fourth day is always an ultramarathon, which is 80 to 95 kilometres. And then the next day after that is a guaranteed 42.2 kilometres marathon. Now, what you don't know is the route you're taking. You're given a logbook before you set off on your first day. So you have a fair idea. They'll give you points. They'll give you compass reference points, and you have to carry a compass and be able to read a map. So you have a fair idea. Like, to be honest, I won't be out in front, so I'm going to be following the fella in front of me anyway.
So I'll be happy enough. Just, and I hope he's following the right line in front of him as well.
Stay in second place, absolutely. Come here, Brian. If somebody's out there tonight and says, listen, this is a good left, but I really want to help Brian and support Brian, where will I find a link or something to give you a few bob? I presume you're not like the county board, like you will accept cards and a bit of cash maybe or whatever.
100% only, yeah. So I suppose we have a couple of things on the go at the moment for fundraising. So next Wednesday night, in the Breton in Killarney, we're having a table quiz at 7:30. So that's Wednesday the 12th. So if anyone wants to come in and support that, they can do that. Otherwise, easiest way to find me would be Instagram. If you look up Marathons for the Mind, you'd find us there. And we've got a link to the GoFundMe page. If you go on to GoFundMe.com, you look up Marathons for the Mind, you'll find it there as well. There's a number of different ways.
Fair play to you, Brian. Listen, we'll let them out on social media as well, just to give you help along. And sure, you never know. You know, if you have a phone signal, we might be able to give you a ring there in the desert or something if you get lost. Brian, listen, thanks very much. I really enjoyed that this evening. That, of course, is Brian Foley, the Killarney man who's running an ultra marathon, among other marathons, of course, for all the mental health charities as well. We'll take a break. We'll go to news.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, who remembers Liam Higgins? Of course, Liam Higgins was certainly a big man in this area, and we all remember him, I suppose. But the Liam Higgins Cup, it's a special cup, of course, for post-primary schools, and it's in the hands of Kerry team once again, St. Pat's Secondary in Castle Island, who seem to be making a habit of bringing cups into Terrace Talk. I mean, we didn't see in years, lads, and you're in here every week now at the moment. Pam McCarty, what's happening outside there?
Yeah, I suppose, look, we've just had a good year. It's great to bring in another trophy after bringing in the Senior All-Ireland a couple of weeks ago. So yeah, long may it last.
I suppose you get a taste for it and you get more competitive, and I suppose you win and you want to win more. But it's unusual that the winning culture, you have a younger team coming with the senior team as well. I mean, that must be hugely exciting.
Yeah, it is. I suppose, look, success breeds success. And I suppose even 12 months ago, the under 15 team winning the Russell Cup against Green was huge. John, it gave the older guys massive belief when they saw that the senior team didn't win in the All-Ireland. I suppose gave the under 16 and a half the belief that they could go on and win this. So definitely it's kind of having a knock-on effect. And a lot of these guys were small schools, so they're training together. A lot of the panels, there's players are overlapping, so that definitely helps as well. Like we'd four starters on the 16 and a half team from the senior team, so that experience was huge. And I suppose you are starting maybe hopefully a winning culture. Mm-hmm. And that does definitely help.
I suppose people say St. Pat's, Castle Island. I suppose most people automatically think Castle Island, Desmond's, but it's obviously the hinterland as well, Desmond's included. Name the teams that we're talking about.
Yeah, so you've got Curro, Scart, Cordell, Ballymac, Desmond's, Knocknagashel, Fieries as well. Actually, there was one guy from Fieries. So there's a good spread between all the clubs, and again, as we'd have said before, like, the clubs are doing great work, and we're delighted to get the boys in and hopefully send them back in a better place again. It's two Goro guys we have here today, because a lot of the guys are out playing minor county league today in the latter stages, which is great.
I know, it's a bad night, isn't it?
It's a bad night, yeah.
They're outside there in the rain at the moment, giving out to referees and umpires and linesmen, and the Curro boys are sitting inside here, which is great to have. John O'Sullivan, before we get to the Curro boys, it's interesting when he named out all the teams. The first team he mentioned was
Curro,
absolutely. was that by accident or by design?
Pure accent.
it's no accident that the captain is from Curro as well too.
So yeah, Patrick has done a very good job. The other coach though is John Forrest, and it's Patrick and John have kind of inculcated this culture where these guys are playing very, very good football. So you have the under-15s from last year became the under-16s and a half this year, and then you've got the minors. So it's the same kind of football that they play all the time. You basically handle the ball in the backs, you win the right to kick the ball. Once you kick the ball quickly and directly, you've got forwards then kind of feeding off that. So the kind of football that they play is a lovely football, but it's the same kind of football you play all the way through.
Mm-hmm. John, you can look in from the outside, because you told me you were from Ardfert,
right,
of course, and seeing that we're talking about beautiful football, you know, and Ardfert kind of, I don't know, does that even come in the same sense at times? To stand outside and watch what is happening in front of your eyes over the last number of years, from where you kind of went to where you are now, I mean, that must be hugely exciting.
Well, there's a huge pride in the place, number one. But remember, there were guys like John McNally from Scarlett Glen who were with the great St. Kieran's teams. You had Tim O'Connor from Cordell, who were involved in football for years and years and years. there's a great culture in the school of football and of sport generally. Julie Toomey kept basketball teams going forever. There's rugby teams in the school. So this, if you like, is it's just another kind of gift that we have, if you like, to offer. But the football has been huge this year, and Patrick and John have really, really done well with it.
Mm-hmm. And of course, two fellas who have done really, really well with it as well is Rory Broston and David Healy. Gentlemen, you're very welcome to Corrimin. Please tell me you don't have Curragh jerseys underneath that, do you?
Oh, no, no.
No, you left him at home, surely. Rory, talk to us about the final. It's great to get to a final, but I mean, to win one is a hard job. Summarise the final for us, maybe?
I suppose at times we played great football, then other times it's about winning the hard ball, you know. Finals are there to be won, doesn't matter how you win them, just win the game. That's the truth.
You're a real get over the line man, aren't you? Are you a back?
Yeah.
Okay, they didn't come up the field too often against you, so did they?
No, not at all.
Turn them over and bring the ball down. David, are you in the forwards?
Yeah, it's in the forwards, yeah.
Okay, so you're hoping that when the ball goes down the field, Rory's going to win it and route one down to you, is it?
Yeah, it's the plan, hopefully, anyway.
Does the plan work a lot?
Yeah, it does. We've a good system going, like, that's what won us in the end, like.
Yeah. Come here to me, you're playing in a final, and of course, there's a build up to it. I mean, it's not kind of the East Kerry final, and it's not kind of a school's final with some gang down the field. It's a huge final. It's in UL, first of all. Have you ever played in that pitch before?
That was our first time playing in UL, yeah.
Was there a wow factor when you got off the bus and
yeah,
said,
my. Yeah, we've been in a situation before, like, in these big games, which really helped us in the final. Lost the Cup last year, we were all nervous. We weren't as nervous today than last week, and we won it. Helped us in the game, right? Yeah.
Is that because you're getting older and growing up bit by bit, or is it because your teachers are settling with Owen, or is it because you get into a focus where you know what it's like now, you've done it before, it's not such a big deal where it was the very first time?
Yeah, we spend so much time together at school, like every lunchtime we talk about the games, like we've really tight-knit, like we trust each other, so there's no need to get nervous for big games, we trust your teammates.
So Rory, you're the Liam Brosnan of the school, is it? You do the terrace talk and you decide who's playing well and who's not playing well, is it?
We all come together, it's a collective group, like there's no individuals, we're all great friends at the end of the day, like, so makes it easier to play together because everyone knows, like, I know where Dave is going to be in the field, he knows where I'm going to be in the field, like, do you know, it makes it a lot easier, like.
Mm-hmm. Of course, playing with the school is different as well. I mean, like, you have your club, and that club bond never breaks. I mean, I'm St. Michael's Filemore, and that's the club, that's where it all happens, where it all starts. But when you go to the school, you kind of have to put your Curragh jersey on the bench, and you have to play with the fella from Knocknagoshal, and you have to play with the guy from Scarton, and you have to play with the guy from Cordell. That relationship must be a nice relationship to build up, particularly when you put on the school jersey.
Oh yeah, it is great, like, sure. I suppose we probably missed out in a year of football, and you know, that kind of brought us together then, and with the Russell Cup last year and this year with some older fellas as well, we were always playing together, even with St. Kieran's, like the club or the district, like, you know. So it kind of came together, you know, compared to Tralee schools who wouldn't be playing with each other all the time. We kind of were lucky to be playing with each other most of the time, really.
That's an interesting point, John, actually. I mean, you know, I suppose in other areas there's more schools as such, but you have that kind of section marked off where you have those six or seven clubs that can kind of feed in unattained. Now, obviously, someone's going to say, oh, the Abbey Field's up there as well, and you can go to Abbey Field as well. But in the main, you know, it is kind of little hamlet of football in that school.
It very much is so. I think I said before that it's a cast line's a bowl, and these villages, if you like, they're hamlets kind of on the hills. They feed right down into the place. And like, in fairness to, we say, Desmond's and Cordell as well too, they'll give us the pitches anytime we want them to go training. So when these guys, you know, get out onto the pitch, the clubs are very good to us. It means then the guys can come together very easily. It's also a very small school, by the way, so there's only 200 kids in the school. Maybe sometimes there may be 30 fellas from abroad, from Austria, Germany, these kind of places. So you've 170 footballers. So when these guys, you know, when they go there and play, they need each other badly. So it doesn't matter whether you're from Scarter or whether you're from Cordell, these guys want to win. So there's no such thing as club differences there whatsoever. And they're all very good friends. They're all in two classes together, three classes together. So they get on very well.
Mm-hmm. Pat, can you remember going back to days when you'd enter and to be over after round one, and you know, you go into the dressing room and well done, boys, and the very best to look. Where did the journey go from there to here?
Yeah, that's the thing with Munster competitions in school. If you lose the first round, you're out. I suppose with this under 16 and a half team, they were lucky, they kind of went under the radar. They were playing their games when the senior team were in the Munster final and the All-Ireland series, and all the talk was about them. So they kind of crept into a semi-final, and then against Rathmore, they knew they were up against Carnivory School. They knew they'd have to really up their performance, and that's kind of where the whole journey started, really, with this competition. So it was great, the pressure was off them as such all the ways, When you get to the final, then obviously there is a bit more pressure, and there's the expectation that you will follow the senior team. And thankfully we did, and thankfully we did get over the line in the end.
Absolutely. Well, look, we're going to take a break because we're going to come back later. Did you ever hear of Liam Higgins?
Yes.
You've heard of him. Well, we're going to hear about him when we come back after the break, and we're going to listen to a bit of commentary about him as well. And then I'll tell you my Liam Higgins story when he was playing with Dingle CBS versus Carsevine CBS. We'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now we're here celebrating, of course, the Kerry Post primary team, St. Pat's of Castle Island, the winners of the Liam Higgins Cup. And of course, the cup itself is named after Liam Higgins. Of course, he was a former senior All-Ireland winning footballer here. He taught, of course, teams, I suppose he taught teams in Dingle CBS, for sure, two All-Irelands, 96. We were very close, weren't we? We said 97, 96, and 2001. And of course, Liam was a prominent broadcaster, of course, here with Radio Kerry as well. And we have a small clip here of Liam Higgins and the 2002 All-Ireland final against Armagh.
The parade, I think, is a wonderful event, and it's unique to Gaelic football, and I think we should keep it up. This is the wonderful annual occasion for the football, and of course, I think we should keep up its tradition.
And for the guys in our team, for whom it is the first All-Ireland final, what advice would the others have given them about All-Ireland final there? What can you actually say to a guy?
You can just tell them like that it's just another game. You can say that to them, but you might as well be talking to the wall as Cotton that way. They know, well, it's not another game. It will have helped them that they played here in the semi-final. It will have helped them that they had a quarter-final. Maybe that could be very important. Now they're veterans of Croke Park. This is their third game, which I think is going to be big help. They didn't have this massive crowd here before, but they won't take any more notice of that than they did the last time.
There you go, Liam Higgins, late great Liam Higgins, of course. And of course, he was on commentary for years with Wishy Fogarty, which brings us all the way back around to Terrace Talk again. It's all circles. Rory, from here, where do we go?
I suppose Corniverino is the next.
God, he's ambitious, isn't he, huh? My God, take on the big boys, roll up the sleeves, and off we go.
Sure, we'll welcome the challenge. Like, we've gotten this far already between the Russell Cup now and a Munster B. It's the next big thing, like, and yeah, hopefully we'll be back here in another cup.
Realistically, that is where you have to go, isn't it? I mean, to taste the football with the big boys now, I mean, you've won your All-Irelands and your Munsters and the whole lot. I mean, the next step up. But I mean, from what you see, you're well capable of competing.
Yeah, like we'd say to the lads day in, day out, they've earned the right to play football, and now, you know, they've earned the right, I think, to play in the top grade in the Corniverry. As Rory said, why not? Joe, you've a chance won't come around again. The school has never played in this competition before, so it's a unique opportunity for these guys. And look, from what we've seen over the last couple of years, I've no fear they'll work hard enough anyway. They've plenty of talent, so that's a good combination to get success in anything.
Mm-hmm. Of course, David, you well know, I suppose you're all on the circuit, that you know who the good players are and the better players are and the players on the various teams. And of course, you're probably all watching yourselves playing. You're playing this week with your college, your school. Your friends are playing probably in Tralee. You know who they are. Would you'd fancy a chance at him, wouldn't you?
Yeah, we know every player now. We've beaten the best. We played the best, like, so we're confident in our ability to go out and any day and beat any team in the county at the moment.
Does that go back to club then, Rory? I mean, you're minors. You're sitting here tonight. All your buddies are out, as I said, playing minors as well. And of course, it is very important to stress as well, you know, that it takes that big panel of clubs joined together, all looking for the one aim and the one object. But knowing how good you are gives you that extra bit of confidence. And is there that confidence within this group of players now?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, we're playing each other since we were 9 or 10 years of age, like, and we know how good the next fella is beside us. And you know, if you know how good he is, you're not afraid to pass him the ball, like, and that goes from 1 to 36. Everyone's as good as the next. Like, it's not just the starting 15. You know, when you're in training, like, you need the other 15 with you as well to give you the hardest test you possibly can, like.
Mm-hmm. And you get out in the field, do you?
Oh yeah, you're definitely doing it.
Would you not like facing in the training?
I suppose anyone really, like, you know.
You're a real J person. Do you swallow the J rule book on how to do a media interview? Answering all the questions right. John, you've been well trained, in fairness.
Well, I'm an English teacher, so we teach them how each word each word can be a grenade. You know, you'd be very careful how you drop a grenade. So Rory's very well versed in how to say what he wants to say without saying too much.
Yeah. Rory, somebody told me you had a first cousin who isn't half bad at football either.
I suppose he's all right. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you give him a bit of advice every now and again?
No, sure. He'd be down to the side of the field now to me, like, so I couldn't tell him much. Like,
would you be able to mark him?
Oh yeah, no bother at all.
Dear God, my God. We won't let anybody into that joke. Have you any famous first cousins that you play football against?
Not at all, no.
No, no famous first cousins. Come here, David. I mean, I suppose we're talking about the football and the winning and the whole lot, and that's kind of important to a point. But, I mean, there must be a great amount of enjoyment as well involved in it, getting ready, going on the bus trip, the whole lot. There must be a good crack, is there?
Yeah, it's great enjoyment, but like we know before going to games like that we want to win, like, and that's what makes us happy going to games. Going to win, like, we're not going to take part, we want to win every game we play in, like.
So, Pat, you're installing the Coro winning culture in them, is it?
I hope so. Well, to a certain degree, yeah.
John, looking at the journey, I suppose, and where you've gone, it's remarkable to say that when you said that you're a small school, and of course I probably would say you were a small school, but when you mentioned those numbers, what did you say, 200-ish?
Yeah, 200-ish, but very often kind of 20, 30 boys who are from, you know, not from Ireland.
Of course, yeah.
And which means that they're
not... And not every one of those play football either.
No, not at all. So yeah, so you are down to very small numbers. So this idea of the identity and, you know, and this idea of the pride in the badge and the pride of what we do in the school, and we do things pretty well. We do things academically, of course, but then you say, you know, once you've done your work, then out you go and you play sports. So they all depend on each other. The interdependence is colossal. But they do play basketball, they play rugby, they play soccer. They got two finals in soccer, or two semi-finals in soccer this year. They're in a final in basketball, or in rugby, I should say, against St. Clement's after Easter. And if I'm right, you won a Munster in basketball this year and lost
to Ireland. I'd say the bus companies love you, do you?
That was a competition, by the way. That was not a B school for six schools. So these guys are terrific in terms of, you know, what they do and what they do for each other. So, you know, yeah. We're very proud of them, to be honest. Yeah. And it has been, as you, you know, you mentioned the word journey. This hasn't been a journey. This is a whirlwind.
Right, okay. Well, hopefully it'll stay a whirlwind for a while anyway, till Rory collects all his medals. David, what are you looking forward to now? Surely you're looking forward to County League next weekend.
Oh yeah, back at it now with the club, County League next weekend.
Who have you played and who you're playing and what division you're in?
Our County League's almost over at this point. I think we didn't do too well in this. Like, but
it's about competing. That's all it is.
Yeah,
doing your best. Good stuff, lads. Listen, guys, it's great to have you in. I mean, it's a fantastic achievement. Of course, it's nice to link in with the Liam Higgins event as well. And sure, it's great to have Castle Island people on too. Is it 2 weeks out of three? 3 weeks out of four? Two weeks out of three?
Yeah.
My God, almighty. And we probably hadn't you on ever, I suppose, before that. So keep winning. Cora, we'll have you in yourself some other night. Rory, tell your first cousin, you know, to pick things up maybe and give him a few belts of a shoulder here and there. He's going very well at the moment. David, sure, you know, if you don't have a famous first cousin, sure, you can talk to a neighbour or something. Pat, the County League, you were blown, I was going to say town, but obviously you're more professional. You were in Carstveen yesterday, were you?
We were, yeah. Yeah, we had a good win. 2-point win in the end, tough place to go. So delighted to get out with the win.
It's nice to play County League, isn't it?
It is, yeah, absolutely. And the way it's run this year, you know, you're playing either every second week or every week, and it's great. It's brilliant. It's just everyone wants games at this stage of the year. You don't want to be training, because if there's a 3 or 4 week gap, you know what the training is going to be. It's going to be a hard slog. So, you know, with the 2 week gap or 1 week gap, at least you know you're playing games, and that's what everyone wants to be doing.
Well, you have to ask John about Hartford.
Yeah, under 15s going well. We're trying to get a B team is going as well too, so we're going very well in Hartford at the moment. Yeah.
Good God. And of course, you play a small bit of hurling out there as well.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I'm not involved, but absolutely. My brothers now would be far more interested in hurling than football.
Big St. Brendan's men.
Yeah, very much so.
St. Brendan's, who lost to Dr. Crokes in the hurling league at the weekend. God. You'll have to go back training harder, lads. Listen, thanks very much and the very best to luck to you. We look forward to you watching your career, of course. And I can't wait for the first round of the Corner of Rhee. No. Who do you want in it?
Anyone. We'll take on anyone.
Jesus, he's fierce confident, isn't it? Now go on, just pick one anyway.
I suppose.
How about your neighbours over in Rathmore? They're still in it. They'd be too close to you, would they?
They're in it this year, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be tight, wouldn't it?
Would.
You could come into town to take on some of the boys here.
We lost the green this year already, so it might be nice to get back at them again, like.
Okay, we'll book that one for you. And when you win the Corner of Rhee, make sure you come inside here. Bring Mr. O'Sullivan there with the good English. And please don't swallow the GA book before you come in next time, okay? Good stuff. After break, we change from football to cycling. But strangely enough, we'll be staying with Castle Island. We'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee. Where being local means coming home.
Choose a rewarding career in healthcare by applying to be a healthcare support assistant with HSE Cork Kerry Community Healthcare. Staff required throughout County Kerry. Ongoing training and education provided. Travel expenses and paid travel time while working. For more details and to apply, go to hse.ie/jobs and search under keyword for 0323.
Hello, 7122633. Roger Harty Opticians.
Hello, Roger. Where are you?
Stand in front of Dom O'Donnell's. Look across the road. If you can't see me, you need to see me.
Well, I'm upstairs, downstairs, looking for my glasses.
Not a problem. I've got three pairs of prescription glasses for €100. And remember, for your eye care, we care.
Hello, I'm Liam O'Connor, head chef of the Mad Monk restaurant in Killarney. If you're looking for some fresh inspiration in the kitchen this Good Friday, then check out all the easy and delicious seafood dinner ideas at radiocurry.ie/Quinlan's. Across Radio Curry's social media and at quinlansfish.com. There's even an easy-to-follow video to show you how to cook pan-fried salmon with champ potato and dill cream sauce. Quinlan's, always fresh from tide to table.
Travels Through a Kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
Would that be a reason why you moved to Kerry?
It is the reason that we moved to Kerry. Yeah, we're from East Cork and it was just too flat. We always spent our weekends coming to Kerry and climbing around the reeks and that. Even if the weather was really bad and you didn't want to go too high, we'd take a hike around Muckross Lake or, you know, the scenery is just beautiful. We just had a real grow for the place.
Travels Through a Kingdom every Sunday evening after the 6 o'clock news on Radio Kerry. From the sidelines to the stand, Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Now, it's hard to believe the 2023 Kerry Group Ross Moon is on nearly already. Of course, the four-day cycle event, which takes part over Easter. It's back in Kerry. Back in Kerry last year as well. But it's kind of heading back to its ancestral home, maybe in around mid-Kerry and thereabouts. And I'm delighted to be joined now by two men that know a small bit more of it, and we'll be joined later on the phone by Paddy Clark as well, and he'll chat to us. But Mark Murphy and John Breen, two guys, I suppose, tasked with running the event, I suppose. And I suppose it's like everything, John, I mean, while people have been around the ring before, every year throws up something different and, you know, the job gets harder. Are you enjoying the task or were you tasked with the job?
No, I'd have to say I'm enjoying the task. I'm enjoying it because of the cooperation we're receiving and all the help brought from committee, volunteers, the host clubs, media, everybody. You know, there's actually a tremendous buzz around this year, and a lot of that is credit due to Mark just sitting beside me here. He's put out the word has gone everywhere. I think it might be one family over in Western Samoa or someplace that doesn't know the race is on, but their Wi-Fi must be down. But
they'll be there before Friday, don't worry. He's writing it down already.
The traction has been massive.
Yeah,
this year,
it's interesting you use the word buzz, because usually, I suppose, you know, when you run an event, there's so much work that goes on that you kind of get drained before it even starts at all, and, you know, you don't get time to enjoy the event. But in the nicest sense, you're real cycling men, aren't you? So you understand all about it, so you want to get it right, you want it to be the best that it can be, and, like, there's still a buzz, which is amazing.
That's true. We want it 100% right, you know. We don't want anything to go wrong in the event. When it's obviously a big undertaking, a big commitment for everyone, but, you know, the background is there, the help is there, so we're looking forward that it will go off according to plan. The planning has gone on, you know, for months and months. Every day there's a job to be done and stuff, and there is a lot of things you can do and you can start to put in the bank and say that that's done now. And we set ourselves a target of St. Patrick's Day, that if the race was starting that day, were we ready to go. And, you know, I think we hit that target, and now we're, you know, we have to keep everything in place now and hopefully get to the start line on Friday.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And of course, Mark, we are talking Ross Moon. It's a cycling race, of course, and it's 4 days. I mean, it's a huge event when you actually sit down and look at it and say that, you know, there's a cycle race from A to B here today, and then you move on from B to C and the whole lot. Putting all that jigsaw together, Mark, is it an easy job, or is there a lot of moving parts that could go wrong on you?
Well, I suppose there's no doubt about it. There's an awful lot of moving parts, I suppose, Donald, but I suppose, you know, the thing is, I suppose here in Kerry, you know, the tradition that goes with it, I suppose the onus is on you, I suppose, to try and deliver as best a product you possibly can for, you know, when you're talking about 176 riders coming here to the Kingdom and North Cork. There is obviously a whole pile of moving parts in it, I suppose, but we're very conscious of the tradition of the sport in the county. You know, it's part and parcel of, I'd say, society in the county of Kerry with the last last 60, 70 years, if not more, you know. And I suppose it's like anything. Yes, we it was ran last year on the directorship of Dáithí Creedan, and it's this year it's under my good man here, John Breen. And I suppose like anything, it's our intention that we're going to kind of learn from it and bring her on to be bring it on again to be even a better product even for next year, you know. So yeah, look, it's an honour, because I suppose we've grown up in the shadow of the traditions of the great writers of the past, you know, and an awful lot of great Kerry writers and still with us, you know. And I suppose it's the onus and the pressure's on us, I suppose, really, our self pressure, because I suppose we'd like to see things being done so incredibly well that you know, yeah, we certainly will enjoy it, you know. We're looking forward to it, because it's going to be a festival of cycling, and more to the point, it's a festival of sport here in the kingdom. And we want, I suppose, the big thing really for us is that to whet the appetite and get the kids out on the streets and have a look at it, especially when you're looking like Killargan stage, for example, inside the town. Like, you, it is very rarely you get such a top class international field that are literally on your doorstep, and you get to see and feel and touch and get the whole atmosphere that's going with it. And it reminds me as a child, as a young lad growing up at home in Carrigrohane, you know, my father was great friends with Brindy Murphy, who would have been a brother of Mick Murphy, the Ardent man, and listening to those legends. And I remember as a young lad of 8 or 9 years of age being brought into Carrigrohane town and put up my father's shoulders when he came in by Banks's Corner, and the anticipation of that, of she hitting the town of Carrigrohane. And I remember the great Pat Healy from Killargan the same day, was it in the top 4 or 5 riders when they hit the town of Carrigrohane with international riders. And certainly from the age of 8 or 9, living in a place like South Kerry or Carrigrohane, for example, which is totally immersed in the sport of, say, Gaelic, certainly it was what enthused me to want to do it. And, you know, for me, as a man now of 51 years of age, I certainly would say to you that it has had a major influence in my life and how it has factored my own sporting career, but I suppose also the way it's defined me as a person, you know, the love of cycling, I suppose, the love of anybody of any sport. It's all positive.
And of course, John, he's being very modest, of course, because I remember Mark growing up, I mean, everybody played football, but Mark Murphy was cyclist, you know. It was as if he was totally different to what was going on. And I remember those races around Carrigrohane as well, up and down the hill and through Marion Place and around. Mark would be lapping fellas and there'd be other fellas around. How would you get involved very, very early, Mark? I mean, obviously the Ross was a big thing. It passed through the town. We all, as kids, went out. Sean Kelly in the Nissan Classic, I remember being out in the sidelines with the kids and the whole lot and everybody enjoying it. And cycling was funny. It kind of had a height and then it kind of dropped and went up again and down again, but the constant thing was the Ross. The constant thing obviously was Ross the Moon as well. I mean, you know, even older cyclists still talk about Ross Moon as something they wanted to win. I was talking to John Mangan a couple of weeks ago, and he was on about Ross above and Connacht as well, and the whole lot. I mean, these races sustained the love of the sport for people that wanted to watch it.
Well, I suppose I was so fortunate as a young lad growing up, I suppose, you know, in the town of Carrigrohane with a man who rode 2 and 3 Rosses, a fellow called Leo McCarthy. Leo McCarthy set up the club inside in Carrigrohane town, and at one stage we'd end up to maybe the best part of 15-20 riders of notable, you know, the likes of David Sullivan from below on Riverview. Paddy, the late Paddy Dineen, was a powerful sprinter. There was Brian Fitzgerald, you know, there was David, you know, Peter Kavanagh, there was Christy O'Neill, there were some great riders there that we grew up with. Peter Cunning, we used to call him, he was
from Holland.
Dutch, yeah. We used to call him our Dutch champion, it was certainly, I suppose, like, the, you know, you had the influence obviously of a great mentor like that. I work in education at MTU here in Tralee, and I suppose I totally understand what education is and mentors and the value that they have in our communities, you know. So I was blessed with having the likes of, say, the great Leo McCarthy, for example, who had the Evra Wheelers at the time. And I suppose I'm currently based with I'm after, say, my three-year chairmanship, say, given up there with Killarney is my club now, for example. But I mean, again, like that, you know, I'm dying the wool. If the Evra Wheelers were in contention, for example, I certainly would be involved with them still.
I should be cycling home or something, you were
exactly
going to say.
Exactly, yeah.
John Breen, you yourself as well, you know, you have kind of that culture of cycling. I mean, you didn't lick it off the stone either. I mean, you it's around the family, it's around Castle Island as well. Great champions, great stories. How did you get involved in the sport?
Yeah, I suppose I come from a cycling family. My father would have been a Ross Dalton cyclist and that, and developed from there really. And from a young age you're involved in the promoting, because just you need a lot of hands on deck to put on these events, so you're thrown into the deep end. And but I suppose Mark mentioned Carrigrohane, Castle Island, Tralee, Listowel, Killarney, every town in Kerry has such a a tradition in the sport. I mean, if we started naming, we're going to forget people. And I suppose one of the big things in the race this year is going back to Killorglin for that spectacular finish. You know, it's 10 laps of the town after doing the bigger loops. And I mean, it's a showpiece probably for cycling even in Ireland, you know. Mm-hmm. Then every cyclist in Ireland.
It's the stage people like to win, isn't it? I mean, I won't say it's Patrick's Hill, but I mean, the fact that you go around 10 times, you're fairly drained and much lift in the tank when you want to sprint by the final time.
No, then they're 4 days in as well, and they're 4 days of extremely tough terrain, and you know, something very predictable might not work out that way. It's often very tactical, and for the top guys and the last day as well, you know, there might only be seconds between them, and I'm actually predicting it's going to be very close this year because of the high quality. So it could be all to play for. The race could be in the mix going around the last corner, you know. Sometimes it gets that tight, you know. So it's continental style racing in one way, with this short loop in the town, big crowds, people follow it all weekend, and they also tend to head to Clarendon then for the finale as such, you know. And this none of this would happen, I have to bring in here, without the Kerry Group. It's Kerry Group Rossmoon, which we're so indebted to. You know, they're involved for the best part of 20 years now. They've done so much for the sport profile, and I think, you know, they like the last stage, we like it, the riders like it, spectators like it. It's just a natural fit.
Mm-hmm. And it's vital to have a big company supporting with a big name that, you know, that rubber stamps your event, because I suppose it gives you that extra kind of support as well. You know, it's a big sponsor, and it's not a sponsor change every year. It's the Kerry Group Rossmoon. I mean, for as long as I know it, that's what it is. I mean, it might as well be the one event, which it is. The event itself, Mark, 170 plus cyclists, how many teams, what should people be looking at?
Yeah, what's the story, John, with the amount of teams again? Have we got it, you know?
You had everything knocked out, moving parts. Don't ask that question, Don.
34 teams. There's a mixture of senior teams, and then we have three junior teams, and there would be elite juniors who would be looking to go on to do bigger, maybe, and better things after this. You know, they're getting a feel of the big fields, and the Irish juniors actually won a stage of it last year, which was unbelievable result. So they're coming fully loaded again. We have riders from across the 32 counties of Ireland, all in different teams. We have Spanish rider, Danish rider, some very, very strong riders. There's a very good Scottish rider, Finn Crockett, and Ulster are bringing a very good team. Cycling Munster will be strong, and the Velo Revolution team have the last year's Ross Talton winner, Dara Feely, in their ranks. But cycling can be unpredictable, you know. They'll play it out. You never know who will get away in a breakaway or something, and the dynamic of the race could change it.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Paddy Clark was a good cyclist, was he?
Paddy Clark was very good. We'll never forget 2014, where he wore the yellow jersey, and again he wore it going into Killorglin. It didn't work out for him, but Paddy probably is the best man to tell that story.
Absolutely, and hopefully Paddy will answer his phone and we'll ask him that story after the break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, Donal Barry here on Terrace Talk till 8 o'clock. Of course, I'm in the company of Mark Murphy and John Breen. We're talking the Kerry Group Rossmoon, of course, which is the 4-day cycle event, I suppose, held over Easter. It's basically next weekend, and ends there in Killorglin, of course. And we're getting kind of all different views on it and the whole lot. But a view that we're often interested in, of course, is guys who cycled it and what it was like to cycle and the whole lot. And of course, I have Paddy Clark on the line. Paddy, you mightn't have been on the phone there a second ago when Mark Murphy and John Breen were talking highly of you. So 2014 was a special year for you, Paddy.
Yeah, I suppose I'd raced the Kerry Group Rossmoon pretty much every year up to that since 2008. Generally with Castlebar Cycling Club, they would have been my home team. I would have raced with from the west here. And then I suppose I would have raced out in Europe professionally. I went abroad to Belgium, started with just a club team. I worked myself up to a team there, Terra Footwear, which were a top competition team over in Belgium. So I was racing at a very high level in Europe. Came back, had a good few Ross Taltons, but never really kind of materialised the performances down the Rossmoon. Like, you know what the lads were saying there, like, you can be at a massive high standard. You can come to Rossmoon and you can walk away with the tail between your legs. Like, the standard down there is actually, I suppose, in essence, second to none. We've had, like, you know, really high-end Dutch teams come over to it, British teams, Rafa Condor, these would be big, massive British professional trade teams. And like that, they've all come away not wearing yellow in Killorglin. Mm-hmm. So that, I suppose, I kind of I'd always been a bit of a race that eluded me. The terrain was always so hard. In 2014, I had had a very good spring in the run-up to kind of Ross Moon. I got some massive results. One of the big races that was just on there, Sunday just gone by, the Des Hanlon, I finished fourth in that. I took a lot of wins in kind of domestic races up here in Connacht. I was back home in Ireland. I was finished with Belgium. I was racing on the domestic scene, but I was carrying very good condition. I ended up then coming down to Ross Moon. I suppose with hopes of doing well, because I suppose if you go down there convinced you're going to win it, it could all go pear-shaped on the first day, and then you don't know where to go from there. I suppose you have to take every day as it comes. The route has changed this year, as the lad was saying. Like they're mixing it up a lot now. There was more of a kind of a traditional route where we used to head off into Killarney, down into quite of a good mix of hills behind Killarney, come back, I believe, by Castle Island, and then down then into Clorglen again. And I missed the break the first day. Again, probably sitting 40th, 50th on GC. You know, you're looking like, you know, you don't really know where to go from there. And then the next day we went out by Kenmare up over the Healy Pass. I managed to get into an early breakaway, held in it all day, finished sixth on the stage, and I was up into, I think, about sixth overall in GC. And then what used to be, in essence, quite a legendary stage for Ross Moon was where you would start in Waterville, head down to Carrisdyveen, out over there towards Valentia Island, a lot of the climbs there on the Barnish Gaeligs, and then it was just a rough, horrid day, and I got into the break battling. You see, this is the thing about Ross Moon. You can't sit in the bunch and expect to win it. You've got to get up the road, you've got to attack, you've got to break away. And I got into a very solid break. A lot of really high-end domestic Irish riders, men like Paddy O'Brien, Mark Dowling, and a lot of Dutch riders in there with us as well. And I just stayed in the break, came in, I think Eugene Moriarty, who would have been a big Kerry bike rider, he won the stage. Or was it Paddy O'Brien won the stage? I can't remember who won into Waterville in the end. I was so shattered. But all I know is I got in there myself, in on the back of the break, and managed to take the yellow jersey. But I suppose the thing about it was I was tied right on time with Mark Dowling, and he'd be Mick Dowling's son, the boxer, the Olympic boxer.
That's so right.
For good pedigree, yeah, good pedigree as an athlete. We were tied on time, but I had placed better than him in every stage up until that point, so I took the yellow jersey. So I suppose theoretically we're next stage was down then into Killorglen, the two big large loops on the outskirts of Killorglen, then as the lad was saying, down into the town for the smaller loops. I suppose the thing about it was all I had in my mind that morning that all I had to really do was finish on the exact, just finish by Mark Allen or ahead of him. I think there was about 50 or 60 places in it, so I know when you hit that small lapse, it goes to pieces. There's probably not even 50 or 60 men left in the bunch. There'll be 100 men blown out the back by the time you're finished. So I suppose all you had to do was stay in there. But it's a very tough race when you get in around Clorgland. A lot of people, like, you know, when you see the Tour de France in the yellow jersey riding around, coming into Paris, you know, cheers and champagne. It's not like that down in Kerry. You know, you're not across the line into your.
We don't have baguettes and garlic, is it?
No. There's no champagne going up the hill at Clorgland. It took off real hard start. I had a very good, strong team that we put together. There was a few good lads: Mike Storen from Clare, Brian Canty from Cork, Eddie Barry from Cork, Gareth McCormick from up here in Mayo with me. We had a real Chris Riley as well from me. So we'd gathered together. We'd created a little bit of an Irish trade team. It was called Fit Science.
Nice.
And I suppose, like, the thing about it was we went down there, and these lads, I had been doing well all year. I'd put in some great rides for them and tried to get them results as well. So the camaraderie on the team was good, and, you know, they were ready to lay their lives down for me. And they did that on the two big loops. They gave it everything they had, but we were racing against really high caliber men like Damien Shaw, you may be aware of him, and then the likes of Brian McChrystal, another massive Irish biker there, Mark Dowling. We had lads like Paddy O'Brien. We had a lot of really high end riders, Mark, like, you know, the Dutch riders, British riders. And I suppose the reality situation was they were all just hell bent on dispossessing that yellow jersey off me, because the top 5 to 10 riders, we were so close on time. it was really anyone's to have.
You could pinch yellow jumpers.
Got off the big loops, got onto the small loops. Generally, what you can kind of, I lost a lot of my team in the process of getting there. Of maybe myself, maybe one other rider. And you can kind of only hope then that the momentum of the bunch will keep the peloton fast enough that nobody can break away off the front. But I suppose I tried my best to keep the group together. And I think there was about two or three laps to go. Five guys got away, a sixth jump across, and then I went after them. And I suppose people that know that small lap in Kerry, you come up the hill, you take the left of the top of the town, you shoot out by the leisure centre, mm-hmm. and it's a drag the whole way out there. Your legs are, people think the hill is the hardest part of that Clogden Loop. It's not. The hardest part of the Clogden Loop is actually you take the left turn at the top, because the road, even though people think that road is flat, it's not. It drags right past the leisure centre. And it was on that section there. I tried to bridge over, got onto the back of the breakaway, and to be honest, I always look back at it. I always think it's one of my biggest regrets that I didn't dig harder, but in the moment there was nothing left. I managed to connect to the back of the breakaway, but then lights went out. And next you know, I was absorbed back into the bunch, and that was it. The race rode away in front of my eyes.
My God, I might know whether to give you a hug or shake your hand.
It's kind of the reality of it is like it's something that, like as Lad said, like the Kerry Group Ross Moon is like it means so much to Irish cyclists. Like, you know, I remember my brother coming down. He would have ridden the Ross Moon, my brother Kieran. He would have ridden it many times with me as a teammate, and he didn't ride it that year. And he came down, and I remember he sat in the B&B beside me, and he looked at me and he said, "Geez," he goes, "I had the yellow jersey on me," and he goes, "Geez, I've only ever seen this. And he leant over and he touched it. He held it in his hand. And I suppose that's what it means to people like Ross Moon. It's just Irish cycling. I think it's, to be honest, it's not the number one race in the country, as we said, outside the Ross Talton, like.
Fair pleasure, Paddy. Listen, Paddy, thanks very much for joining us this evening. I'm wrecked after that, especially when you said you were heading out past Langford Street, out past Johnny Porridge's house and off your run or even cycle at the stage. Listen, Paddy, thanks for joining us this evening. It's great to have that great memory, of course. Well, great for us too, I suppose. Probably not so great for you. Do you ever look back very briefly and say, maybe I shouldn't have jumped across?
Yeah, well, I suppose you can't do anything about it now. Like, the past is the past. You have to live and learn from it. But, you know, that's like,
yeah, sure, how bad. Listen, Paddy, listen, thanks very much for joining us. We really appreciate that. That, of course, was Paddy Clark recalling the 2014 Ross Moon. Now, a man who recalled an awful lot of Ross Moons, and you know, I suppose it's incredibly sad in a sense, because this time last year when we were sitting here, we were talking Ross Moon, and just at this desk over here, we had the late Padraig Hartnett, and it's amazing. We captured a clip of Padraig chatting about cycling, and we just listened to this for a minute or so.
If guys winning on the continent, we're very happy with it.
Padraig, it's guess that Matt says that something like that would have to take 4 or 5 years planning. I suppose at times people talk about planning and they kind of put it to the side. We know it'll happen tomorrow and sure we'll get a committee and off we go. The planning process is very slow to get something very stable.
Well, I suppose if you look at what Doughty and his committee did this year, it looked like after Kilorglan, who had ran the Ross Moon for the Kerry Group Ross Moon for what, 19 years, that when the COVID break came, Kerry could have lost it, and without the boys stepping in, and they're slow to praise themselves. But the amount that goes into that, the amount of the safety plan, you had the Rally of the Lakes that Ivan, your producer, knows all about over the weekend, but they were on closed roads. Remember, the Kerry Group Ross Moon is on open roads, so you need a huge amount of volunteers, you need a huge amount of marshals, you need motor marshals, you need medical control. Every team has a team car, so you have a cavalcade of probably 30 cars following it. You have over almost 200 riders on the road, on open roads, so it's a huge, huge event. So I mean, they deserve huge credit what they did to bring it back to Kerry, and with the help of Kerry Group. So hopefully we won't lose it again, because if you lose something...
Yeah, there you go, Padraig Hartnett. It's amazing, it's so fresh, Padraig Hartnett. You would expect him to come through the gate, or certainly expect him to be reporting. And I suppose that's the legacy of the man that's left behind. But you have something special planned for Padraig?
Yeah, for Padraig, obviously, my job this year is PRO, and I suppose I'm trying to fit into the shoes that Padraig so brilliantly did over the years with Kerry Group Ross Moon. And I suppose as a tribute to the great Padraig Hartnett, this year, I suppose, his lovely wife Maura has agreed
Breed to present the yellow jersey to the overall winner in Killarglen on the Monday. And it's a fitting tribute to a man who's given so much to, I suppose, especially, say, niche sports here in the county. You know, the place is so immersed in GAA. He was the conduit, really, I suppose, you know, that kind of gave us the exposure for the sport. And he did it so, he said, did it so selflessly and so effortlessly. You know, I mean, he's sadly missed and will always be missed, especially when it comes to Ross Moon. You know, he was the voice that made that contact with their good selves and with all, you know, different sporting outlets in the region. And you know, it's for us, it's very important, you know, to acknowledge the great Padraig Harnett and what he did for you know, our sport and all niche sports here, you know. So for those who want to be in Killarglen that day to see it, it'll obviously be quite emotional for an awful lot of people, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's great to keep his memory there as well. And as I said, I can't believe it. I suppose every night you come in here, you look back on your emails and Padraig Harnett has some connection with some sport that you got, whether it was soccer or basketball or cycling. John, he mentioned something very interesting there in the 90 seconds that we listened to him. The amount of people that you need to put it together. He was on about the volunteers, the medical, the 30 cars, the riders, the whole lot. And then he said something, it wasn't like the rally where the roads are closed. It's open roads. We forget that sometimes. It is racing on open roads and fellas driving cars and tractors and everything around after them.
That's right. That's why we have an advanced cavalcade that clear the road. We try to create a bubble for the race to happen in. We have like the trained motorbike marshals, Gardaí are brilliant helping that, and they just give us that couple of minutes just to get through, and then this continues on right through the route. So yeah, technically the road is open, and we just look for people's cooperation. And like people, in fairness, are brilliant. I mean, like, you know, whatever way you look at this, this is such a sport mad county, and this buys into that. I mean, you only have to listen to Kerry Radio Sport there on a Saturday, and if you just analysed how many people that are out playing sport, very successful at sport, and cycling is like that. And we have, you know, we love to see a crossover into other sports. I mean, just take for example Cathal Meinen, who was the last Kerry man to win a stage in the race. I mean, he was an Olympic rower before that, and took to cycling like a duck to water, you know. And he was Cathal's a top class rider. He's had some very big wins in his career, and he's back at the start line this year. But again, yeah, your question was, it's an open road, it can be a dangerous place, so we would just please ask for everyone's cooperation to make sure the event goes off safely.
Mark, I'm going to put all the berries into the car. It's a lot easier to do it than doing it back in the RDA, maybe. Where should I go? Where a good spot to watch the race? What different things am I looking out for? Obviously, Killarglen on the final day. That's where all the
Obviously, Killarglen's a kind of a major draw, I suppose, when you're talking about family members and that. I suppose it's like, say, here in Tralee, obviously, the first stage on the Friday, you know, you're going to have a good finishing point being above in the North Campus. So outside the MTU is going to be a big one. The big one will be Bloch Oisin, obviously Cooma Ciste on the Ring of Kerry Road, and then into Sneem with Lurie Moriarty below, who's hosting the final stage. And I suppose again the big one is going to be the third stage, is obviously the new stage hosted by Sleeve Lucre outside, you know, Donny Keller and all his crew out there. It's going to be Kerryman's Table above, and there's 1700 metres of climbing. It's not for the faint hearted, and very much so there's so many places there for people to see that as well. And I suppose again, like that, like anything, you know, you're going back into Killarglen again. Like it's the same thing as buying a ticket for the theatre. You're looking at the cream of Irish sport. You know, literally on the hill there. It's going to be an amphitheatre of sound and, you know, brilliance really as such. You know what I mean? And if you got a young lad there, young he or she, for example, coming wanting to get into cycling, it's certainly a place that's going to inspire them to see the, you know, the warriors of the road. Really, I suppose, you know, you will rarely ever get, unless you follow the Ross Talton, will you ever get such a blend of the finest riders in the country, you know, on show inside in a town like Killarglen, you know.
Mm-hmm. John, if you had a wish list now, three things that you want to happen or not happen, what would be on that at the moment to get through the weekend? Weather, maybe it was one of them.
Yeah, weather, and that's a factor. And my most important thing would be that the race would go off safely. You know, it's like any sport, there are hazards and that. And so that would, the first thing would be that the race would go safely, and that would be a clear number one. Weather would be a factor into that, because if we get dry roads, it makes the event safer. And I'd also like it, you know, that we would have the excitement that you know, we are predicting, and we're confidently predicting that it will be a very exciting race. you have to look at the field, like it's just a cracking field, and then if there was a bit of local success in there, we'd be delighted with that. You know, there's a lot of our riders, there's two Killarney teams, there's one Tralee, there's a number of riders that for different reasons they cycle with different teams. They're all coming here, it's their home race, and we'd love to see
everybody would love success. To win the home race, don't they?
Absolutely.
It would be a great story. I think I suppose right, it's not a shot, obviously. A shot is wrong, isn't it? When you pass the tape or pass the line in Killarglen, do you predict a home winner? Not home. Putting any pressure on you there now.
No pressure. No, I think they'll do very well. I think a lot of them maybe are at, even within the race, there are different levels. We have, you know, A1 obviously being the top category, we have A2s and A3s in the race as well, and we have juniors. So there's a jersey for all of those as well that they'll be competing. So even though they might be a few minutes down on the road and it might look like, you know, that they're dropped or that, they're in their own race.
Still
there,
competing,
you know,
at their level.
And a lot of them, you know, do well at that level, go up to the next, and they bring the success up with them.
And of course we're going to have Mark, we've only 30 seconds, Mark, we'll have you on radio most of the week telling us what's happening.
I've been given the enviable job of it, and I suppose I'll try to do my best, as I said about Padraig Harnett, trying to fit it to that man's shoes. Obviously it's a big ask, but I mean it's look, I won't be caught for words. You know, when you're passionate about a sport like this, you know what I mean? It's maybe I'll be giving out, maybe I don't get enough time to kind of tell you about what is going on, but that's my job, and that's what I'll be trying to do, to bring the news to the people of Kerry, I suppose, you know. And it's a festival of cycling, and it's something that we should all be proud of here in Kerry.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, we'll end on that. Listen, John Breen and Mark Murphy, thanks very much for coming in this evening with us. And of course, Paddy Clark, that amazing story that's going to go down in history now, you know. I thought he was going to win it, you know. He was getting closer and closer and closer. I never thought he was going to tell me I didn't win it. I was sure you had him on that he was going to win it. Do you like Irish music?
Stunning, yeah.
Oh, fair play to you, Mark. Look at that. Look, thumbs up there, Mary Conroy, fan for life. You'll have to stay behind now. Up after Terrace Talk is Mary Conroy with Talk Sauce. And a big thank you to Keane, who was on sound. He was on the phone. He was on the weather as well this evening. He did absolutely everything this evening. Fantastic. He probably could even take part in Ross Moon, maybe, the way he's going. We'll do it all again next week. And listen, thanks very much for joining us every evening. We really appreciate you taking out the time on a Monday evening to listen to us here on Terrace Talk. And we'll do it all again next week.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.